The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
This is an opportunity for New Yorkers to move away from not in my backyard. We all must share the crisis. Now, with this influx of people seeking asylum and support, now we have to go beyond that. We're looking at the potential of emergency shelters and hotels and other facilities. We want to get our faith-based community involved. If there was ever an all-hands-on-deck moment, this is it.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was the mayor of New York, Mayor Eric Adams, on the influx of immigration from the southern border now affecting his city, especially a sanctuary state, right? I do find the reaction just a little ironic. You know, you say, hey, southern border, you know, we're going to make this a sanctuary state for you know, illegals. And then, you know, busload of them show up and suddenly you're mad at the governors down there. You know what I'm going to do? Maybe we should talk more about this in the days ahead. I want to take a look at the morality of what's happening. When it comes to immigration, it's a tough issue. I've said it often. I grapple with it because my heart goes out in mercy to so many who are in need of a better way of life, of opportunity, you know, of what America represents and what we can offer. Yet at the same time, I see drugs coming across our border, and we are seeing unprecedented deaths. You know, drug overdoses kill more people between 18 and 45 than anything else in this country right now. I think China's behind a lot of it, too. A lot of the drugs are manufactured. A lot of that fentanyl comes in through the cartels, but it's made in China. We've got threats when our border is open and soft. You know, the terrorists could easily make their way in. They are patient. We might see the loss of innocent life. We don't know. There's a whole litany of things. And I do believe that, you know, we have a sovereign right to secure our border and to have a lawful means of immigration. But that's a whole other conversation. We can get into that. I see both sides. But really, I think right now what we do is have a tremendous crisis. People crossing the border are thanking Joe Biden. They're saying, thank you. We want to thank the president of the United States, you know, for letting us come. And that's the message that a lot of people are getting. So charity, love, and mercy. That's what I want to always lead with, right? But I also believe that justice, law, and order, doing things the right way is important. So it's probably a great conversation. Maybe we'll have a debate on it. That'd be kind of fun, too, maybe in the days ahead. But yesterday, that was a big day for some states, right? Primary elections around the country didn't bring a whole lot of surprises, except for one, right? In Minneapolis, Representative Ilhan Omar, she almost didn't win. She just squeaked by. That speaks volumes, doesn't it? She squeaked out a win over her primary challenger, City Councilman Don Samuels. Omar took, I think, a little more than, I think it was 50% of the vote. Samuels took 48%. So it seems as though people of the heavily, you know, Democratic 5th District, which the squad member represents, they're growing disenchanted. I think they're a little fed up with this mantra of defunding the police. You know, she and her colleagues have been putting that forward ever since the Floyd riots, and it's not clear if her Republican challenger will have a shot at unseating her in November. I mean, Minnesota's a very Democratic state, but this narrow win is a sign that she is politically vulnerable. Here's a little bit more from former Representative Doug Collins reacting to Ilhan Omar nearly losing her Democratic primary.
It tells me that she's not as popular as the national scene would make her make you believe. And again, when you get disconnected, and this is being a former member of Congress and being in these races, one of the things that I've been all over the country and looking at these is when I see incumbent members get disconnected from their districts, this is what tends to happen. Now, Omar has been definitely disconnected. She's had a lot of controversy. I was really hoping that she would get beat last night. In this seat, because this is going to probably be still a Democrat seat. But I think what happened is I think she just gotten disconnected from the community in which she represents. And this is a community that has a lot of issues with crime, with economics. And she just is on the wrong side of all of that. So it's really a shame she didn't get beat last night, from my political opinion. But it also shows that I believe that she's got a lot of work to do to represent the community that she has. She held just enough support to get by this primary, but I don't think it's going to be something that she can build on long term.
Yeah, that would have been a shocker, wouldn't it? Imagine if she lost the primary. I think it's going to be a major wake-up call for her. But look, I go back to not the individual, not the party flagged in one ways. I think it all comes down to policy. It comes down to the principles that they stand behind and try to promote. And if they're flawed principles, if they're immoral principles, people eventually get just fed up with it, because nothing good comes from you know, those immoral and faulty principles. Now, in New York City, you heard Eric Adams at the top of the hour here talking about the influx into his area. So New York's responded to that. They've opened 11 hotels as emergency shelters for this influx of illegal immigrants. The city's been seeing a surge since May. Now, of course, the governor of Texas, Governor Abbott, he's added to those numbers by starting to bus people to places like McAllen, Texas, to New York City. But Abbott chose New York because it has what the city calls right to shelter, right? Their laws there state that anyone who goes there and who is, you know, who has need, they have a right to stay in temporary housing. So city officials say that there's been a major influx. They're looking at about 4,000 immigrants in the last 3 months. There are also, I think, 17,000 people in the shelter system right now, including about 8,800 children. So Abbott says the town along the Mexican border, a number of those towns that line our southern border, they're overwhelmed by the number of immigrants that are crossing the Rio Grande. And says, we can't handle them. So he just wanted to give some of the northern states that are calling themselves sanctuary states a taste of their own medicine. I hope we get the issue right. I really do. I hope we get this issue right. It's a tough one. President Biden, too, or President Trump, I don't know if you've been following that story. His legal trouble continues to mount. Not only has his mansion been raided yesterday, and there's been nonstop talk about it on all the media outlets, but today he actually took, under the Fifth Amendment in a civil case brought on by the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, and James alleged that Trump's organization committed fraud by overhauling three different buildings so that he could get loans and tax relief. And after the hearing, Trump said this. He said, and I'll quote him. He says, I, quote, once asked, if you're innocent, you know, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment? Now I know the answer to that question, he says, end of quote. So in April, he was held in contempt of court for failing to respond to a subpoena, and the DA of Manhattan has a parallel criminal investigation going right now based on the civil investigation. So the president continuing to make the news. He's out of office, but boy, he has been front and center. He really has been he's been oxygen for media outlets. I had heard that there was a major spike in ratings yesterday with this raid. And of course, everybody turned to their local cable news outlet to see what was going on, and it was really telling how they commented on it. I had a guest on yesterday, got a lot of reaction to William Buckley. Boy, a lot of people did not like his approach, nor how he viewed the president. Really is quite telling. If you take a look at how some of these primaries have gone in the outer districts, a lot of people, they love Trump. And I think a lot of people, as I heard from, you know, the emails I received yesterday, were disenchanted with his with the guest's view that, you know, Donald Trump maybe wasn't the, you know, the best president and don't want to see him run. Will he run? That's the big question. Will he run? A lot of people saying, I used to think he was going to run. Now I'm almost convinced he's going to run, some are saying. I don't know. I don't know. Clearly, I think the Democrat Party is very concerned about a possible run. I think that's why we've seen this nonstop assault on the president over a number of different issues, in a way maybe to bruise him up, bloody him up a little bit before the next round of elections, because it may at least plant in the minds of a lot of voters that, oh, this guy, you know, I couldn't really vote for him again. So will he run? I don't know. We'll see. Will we be better off not? Maybe we'll have that conversation too at some point in the future. Would you like to see a different candidate than Donald Trump run? Are you behind him? Do you want to see Joe Biden run? We'll be getting into that, I know, in the days ahead. Before you know it, general election cycle will be underway. So, but I'll give you a break today. All right. Ukraine, I've been praying for peace, peace in the world, peace and protection over our country. It could be that Ukraine is seriously escalating the war with Russia. Now, how this ends, I'm not sure. You know, one of my concerns was, that things could get much, much bigger. Explosions were heard in Crimea, the area of the Ukraine that Russia took. Remember that? They rolled in there in 2014, giving them direct access to the Black Sea. But Ukraine claims they destroyed, check this out, 9 Russian planes. 9 of them at an airbase there in Crimea. Russia's been using that location as a, as an area or a base to attack southern Ukraine. If it's true, it's a very significant change in the direction of the war. Russia, by the way, is denying that. They are denying those claims. So continue to pray for peace. Hey, do you have a rumba? A Roomba? A Roomba, right? Roomba. Roomba. See if I can get that out of my mouth, right? I bought one for my son, I think, for Christmas or something. It was one of his gifts. And I forget what it costs, somewhere between $200 and $500, right, for these automatic vacuums, right? You turn them on, you probably have. A lot of people have. There's cheaper versions of it. They become much more prolific right now. And, you go to work, the thing comes out of its base, it vacuums your home, it redocks. When you come home, your floor has been vacuumed, right? Great convenience. I even have a friend who has a lawnmower that does this, right? He's got a driverless mower. He just plugs it in and it mows his lawn. It kind of maps the territory that it needs to cut. The same thing with the Roomba. It's kind of cool, right? I love technology. It makes life a little more convenient. Maybe gives you a little more time. But what people didn't really count on, and the reason I'm telling you about, why I'm talking about robotic vacuums, some Roombas in particular, I was shocked when I heard that they are now turning into data gathering machines. You're like, how's my vacuum cleaner collecting data on me, right, Drew? Come on. Turns out that Roomba by iRobot, that's who I think is the company that manufactures these things, has actually been collecting data on its rooms, on the rooms that it's cleaning. It transmits the data back to the company. So, look, it's not just Facebook. It's not just your phone that might be tapping into you. But now with this technology, your vacuum cleaner is too. So it's more than likely that that data is going to go to the world's largest, retailer, Amazon. Amazon is buying iRobot for, I think, $1.5 billion, $1.7 billion. That's going to give them access to the layout of your home. Here's a good overview from digital and tech podcaster Drifter on Amazon buying Roomba. Check this out.
Amazon just purchased iRobot. You may know them as the company that manufactures the Roombas, the little vacuum cleaner bots that just zoot around your house, often get lost, but make it to where you don't really have to vacuum. And they did so not because they wanted the robot technology, not because they thought this was a hot market, but because they want to be able to see inside your home. And they're talking about this vision of an ambient intelligence in the smart home, with the example here of Alexa, tell Roombot to vacuum in front of the couch. And they're more or less talking about the reason they bought Roomba is for the data that they already have about the shape and layout and things that are going on inside people's houses. And Amazon already has the always-on Alexa, the Ring, which is always recording that they share information with law enforcement warrants. And they tried their own little smart home robot here that was supposed to kind of do the same thing. It was supposed to kind of move around and do little tasks for you, but ultimately map your house. Because once they map your house, they know what you own, they know how expensive it is, they know how much square foot you have. There's so, so much marketing data that they can use from that. And it just feels really sad that, you got a giant corporation, Amazon, Facebook, Google, anytime they buy a new product, it's not to do something cool, it's usually just to deliver more effective ads. There's this bizarre, almost like corporate MLM thing of who has the best ad delivery algorithm. And Amazon thinks they're going to improve theirs by letting people unbeknowingly have a robot clean their house and record every square inch of it.
Now, look, it's not just your vacuum cleaner. This might be news to you. Amazon also owns Alexa, gathers all kinds of data on its users. Ring, maybe you've got a camera or a doorbell. It views what's going on outside, maybe on your front doorstep or in your backyard. A lot of information. Jeff Bezos' company will be able to target, I think, a lot more advertising at you, offer you more things to buy from the store. I'm sure you probably have, you know, had a conversation with somebody, and next thing you know, you're getting ads on your computer or your phone about it. Does your phone listen? I mean, what about this data? How are they so good at this? Well, Russ White, he's a well-known voice in computer networking, where he has advocated for simplicity and privacy and really the decentralized internet. And he co-hosts The Hedge and the History of Networking podcast. Good to have him here with us today. Also the author of Unintended Dystopia. It's a book about social media's impact. Russ, thanks for your time. Good afternoon.
Hey, thanks, Drew, for having me on. Wow, you put a big introduction in there. I would just say that it's not just your Ring and it's not just the Roomba now. It's also your television and your phone.
Wow, your TV. Now, you got to tell me about that.
In some cases.
Okay. All right, you got me now. Because here's the deal.
What don't they have?
I just recently moved, and I was thinking about getting like those, you know, those light switches and plug sockets, so you could set timers when you're gone. The lights will come on, to, you know, that whole type of thing. So, how do your lights, you know, communicate information or data back to the manufacturer, and why should they have that information?
So I wouldn't say they direct, like they're not going to copy your conversations down like your Roomba might or your Alexa would, mm-hmm. but they will. They do know when you're home and when you're not home, right? Depending on how you have things set. And if you use the timers in there, it's going to know that the light system is going to know, oh, I know they're not going to be home on a certain day. Why? Because they've set their timers up to work or not work or whatever. So vacation and home modes and things like that. So there's a lot of this stuff that's out there now, unfortunately, that is really, really, really consuming our data.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So tell me about the television. You know, there's a lot of smart TVs that are out there. Do they listen or can they watch you? I've heard that there's like a camera that's almost hidden in the screen that can view what you're doing in your room. Is that true?
Well, it depends on the smart TV you're talking about, but some of them certainly can, and some of them have been shown to do so. There are studies where they've blocked off internet access or they've gone about following, you know, tracing exactly what the television is looking at or when it transmits data. And they can tell, you know, that, yeah, the television's out there and it's looking at your, it's transmitting stuff off to people while you're watching TV and stuff. So it's going to depend on the brand and stuff, but there are instances out there of this going on.
Yeah, my guest is Russ White. If you want to join us, I only have him for a few minutes this side of the hour. Feel free to dial in at 888-914-9149. We'll take your calls, your questions, your comments. I started talking about the vacuums, and I had this conversation earlier with my producing team. I'm like, well, who cares if they know that you're vacuuming your floor? Vacuums make maps of the rooms that they vacuum, I'm assuming, but why is that important information for a company to have? So they know where your couch is, your table is. I mean, I don't explain this one to me that, and why they would want it. Why iRobot or Amazon would want this information?
So a very common mistake among people who don't understand this field very well is to say, "Hey, you know, I don't care. Like I've done nothing wrong, so why should I care about them knowing? Or why should I? They're not after me as a person because I'm just not all that interesting." Well, actually, you are pretty interesting to a lot of these companies because, you know, just your ability or you as a person, what they can find out about you to target advertising is the common one. But there's a lot more to it than just that, honestly, than just targeting advertising. There's a lot about knowing who you are, predicting things, knowing when you might buy a pizza or when you might not, and how to influence your decisions in those areas, which, again, may sound really trivial to a lot of people. But honestly, it's not all that trivial when you get into it, because you have to read this book called The Nudge and by Thaler and Sustein and understand that these people are not just trying to understand you. They're trying to understand you towards a goal, which is to manage you or to control you in some way. And they won't put it in those terms. They'll put it in terms of, oh, we're trying to help you live your best life. But the reality is what they're really trying to do is manage your decisions for you.
That's fascinating. You know, I could see better knowing when you're home, or, you know, maybe firing off an ad when you're hungry, you know, to order the pizza or whatever it is that they're trying to sell could increase sales. You see the value of data, or, you know, knowing you need to buy something, having that ad come up. I don't think people realize, Russ, and I just look at this technology and what a blessing it is. I love technology, but at the same time, what a curse it can be. People don't realize how much of their privacy has been lost over the past 20 years, do they? It's been a very slow trickle, but, you know, you take an inch here, an inch there, next thing you know, you're a foot, then you're a yard further away from really where you should be. Have we lost a significant amount of privacy, in your opinion, and does the average person even recognize that?
I would answer yes. We have lost a significant part of our privacy. And I would further say that the average person probably doesn't spend a lot of time thinking about it. It's all very implied. And again, why should I worry? I'm small fry, right? I'm not somebody they're going to care about. Mm-hmm. And that's a very common impression. But it's just not that simple. They care about everyone. Right or wrong, they care about everybody. And they care about everybody's data. So that's kind of where things are. And yeah, as far as privacy goes, yeah, we've lost a lot of our privacy in the modern world. And there's a lot of discussion over this. People will say, well, I don't know, we didn't seem to have a lot of privacy before when there were, when the walls were paper thin and stuff like that. Yeah. And that's true enough. It is true that we used to have less privacy than we do now with modern houses and stuff. But, you know, a lot of that is a different kind of thing. Used to you lost your privacy to your next door neighbor. Now you lose your privacy to somebody who is sitting in India or in some data center someplace. Mm-hmm. So it's a completely different thing. It's a completely different effect.
So you know, advice for those who are listening who have the Nests and the Rings and the smart TVs and the smartphones and the iRobot Roombas. What would you suggest people do to regain or maybe safeguard their privacy?
Yeah, so, you know, I have a whole line of things that I do personally where I try to pay attention to which search engines I use and stuff like that. Now, none of that's going to impact your use of something like a Ring. I do have a robot vacuum cleaner, and I do use it. But as far as other smart devices, I really don't have any other smart devices. I don't have a Ring. I don't use any of those kinds of things in my house. If you buy a new TV, they're all smart TVs.
Right.
Okay, so what do you do about that? Well, you can do things like just cutting down on or just blocking them physically so that they can't hear what you're doing, or, you know, unplugging them or blocking them from the internet, which could impact services. But there are techniques. It's just that it's not simple. It's not easy for the average person.
Well, I don't think it's going to get any less intrusive in the days ahead. I think as this technology continues to evolve, as our homes become even more smart, there's going to be a lot of personal data that's going to get into hands of a lot of people. Your final thought on this, in your opinion, is this dangerous, or is this a natural evolution of the age we're in and you're not that concerned?
My answer is, yeah, it's dangerous. Because it's giving these companies a lot of power over you that you don't understand, and they know more about you than you do in some cases. And, you know, therefore you're kind of putting yourself in a position sometimes of not having as much control over your own life as you probably should, or you definitely should. So there are dangers here, and I do think it's going to get worse. I don't think it's getting better. I think it's up to us to kind of push back. To a large degree.
Well, Russ, thank you. Thanks for being here. Your book, Unintended Dystopia, people want to check that out. What's the best way to connect to it?
Well, it's available on Amazon, Wittenstock, all the normal places where you would be able to buy a book. And, they can grab it. And there's a new one coming out that's a little bit less academic called Unfriending Dystopia that has a section on practical ideas of how to fight back a little bit, or how to be a little more private in your own personal life.
Well, that sounds great. Thank you for the insight. I'm grateful. I'm sure we'll talk again. So look forward to the next time.
Yep. Thank you. Thanks for having me, Andrew.
You got it. That's Russ White. And again, check out his book. Sounds like a fascinating read. It's called Unintended Dystopia. It's about a book about social media's impact. Stay with me. I've got to just take a short pause. When we come back, stopping by the studio today is Doug Grain. We're going to take a look at some of these heroic Catholics throughout the ages. We live in a really, I think, unique age, very difficult time. There's so much we can learn from those who've gone behind us. He'll share really an unapologetic tale of 21 saints from 21 centuries, and maybe you'll be in this book one day. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Virtue preserves like salt and shines like light. If we bring virtue into our own lives, we will bring virtue into our families, our church, and our culture. But we can't grow in virtue if we don't know how. What are the virtues? How do we practice them in our daily life?
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Those were a few poignant words from Good Catholic about the need for virtue in our life. Look, I think this is so critical. I think it's so important to not only throwing open the gates of heaven so you can be with God for all eternity, enjoy the paradise that awaits you, but also I think it's so critical for the future of our country. And I've spoken about this a million times. I've talked about what our founding fathers have had to say, you know, that only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. That's it. And as we become more corrupt as a country, as a nation, as a people, what happens? You become more need of masters, and you see what we're, you know, we're encountering today in our own world, right? You know, if we're going to keep our form of government, which is this wonderful, I think, you know, form of government, a Republican democracy, then we need virtuous people. But what is virtue? All the saints had it, right? You and I are called to exercise it. The Catechism of the Catholic Church says that virtue is a habitual and firm disposition to do good. Really simple definition, right? Catechism entry 1803. Virtue is a habitual and firm disposition to do good. It allows you, you know, the person, not only to perform good acts, but to give the best of yourself, you know, to pursue good and to choose really concrete actions. The saints knew this. They lived it. They encountered it, right? They practiced it. And I'll tell you right now, Bishop Barron, who is a friend of this network and now the Bishop of Winona, gave a homily this past weekend that I think everyone should hear. We all have a calling from God. Here's a quick clip from part of that sermon.
It's not just coming from inside the potential hero, the motivation to act in this way. It's not just coming from friends who challenge him. But the one who calls forth the heroism of the hero's journey is none other than God himself. Think in story after story where God does exactly that. He calls people out of their comfortable domesticity and to move into more dangerous territory, to go on a kind of adventure. And only because of that heroic journey do they make a new way of life possible for others. It's all over the Bible.
I love the way he talks. I love his intelligence. And boy, what a blessing for the people there in the Diocese of Winona. It's Bishop Robert Barron. I saw a piece yesterday in the New York Times. They published an op-ed, and it had a title that caught my attention. The title was this: New York's Hottest Club is the Catholic Church. Yeah, New York's Hottest Club is the Catholic Church. There's an area in New York City called Dimes Square, D-I-M-E-S, not Times, but Dimes Square, and that's a haunt for so-called Generation Z or Zoomers, and the kids seem to have had it with the prevailing liberal orthodoxy of their day and of the culture. So according to the author, they hold a very different political, even apolitical view than you would normally find in that city. And it seems that the ultimate act of rebellion against the culture is, well, to become Catholic. And they're right. It's been that way ever since Jesus Christ walked on the face of the earth. So whatever the prevailing culture has been, authentic followers of Christ have always gone against the grain. Even in the Middle Ages, when the power and the influence of the church was at its highest, saints like St. Francis, St. Dominic, we just talked about them earlier in the week, they were persecuted by fellow Catholics because they were going against the grain of the culture, calling people to more than just going to Mass and reciting prayers. And that's how it's been over 21 centuries. Today, of course, we celebrate the great feast of St. Lawrence, who definitely went against the grain. And I'm joined today by somebody who knows not just his story, but wrote a book called Against the Grain, Heroic Catholics Throughout the Ages. And I just think this is a great read for you. Belongs in your spiritual library. Doug Grain, G-R-A-N-E, has documented 21 Catholics who went against the grain through the centuries in this new book. You ought to check it out. Okay, I'll tell you how you can get connected. He joins me today. Doug, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It's great to have you here. So love the play on words there. And tell me a little bit about why the Catholic Church seems to be the one institution in human history that definitely stands against the culture. It seems to go against, as you put in your book, the grain.
It goes against the culture because we are imitating Jesus himself. When Blessed Mother presented Jesus to Holy Simeon received Jesus and said, "You are a sign of contradiction." And following him, we are to be signs of contradiction in our own times and go against the grain.
That's great. So, you know, you turn to the saints to show those examples of how the church does that. Why the saints opposed to, let's say, teaching documents or the various institutions or movements in the church? What inspired your work?
To take a step outside of the church first is just the heroic, how heroes are portrayed in the media and movies. When society trends towards vice, one way to counter that is to lean into virtue. And Hollywood, they've got their version of how to portray heroes. But as Catholics, we know that we look to our saints as our heroes, and they lived lives of heroic virtue. And perhaps we could talk about that a little bit later, but that's the reason.
Yeah, no, I agree. You chose those saints based on some of the virtue, some of the heroic virtue that you speak of, that they exemplified. And some of them are, I don't know, some of them are obscure. Like, I can't say I've even heard when I was getting ready for this interview of Saint, is it Alfeldra? She lived in the 7th century. And,
she did.
You know, you chose to exemplify, I think she chose to exemplify chastity, but you put her in the book. Tell me a little bit about her and share with us some of the great saints that you decided to include.
I did. I chose several saints that are well-known, but I tried to live up to the spirit of the book to pick some of the lesser-known saints as well. They lived equally virtuous lives, but perhaps not as held up, you know, for other people to notice them. So I picked St. Tarsicius in the 3rd century, St. Alexius, St. Wolfgang, St. Raymond Nonnatus, St. Roque, St. Lidwina, St. Nicholas Owen, and even in the 20th century, Blessed Franz Jagerstatter.
Yeah, so let's talk about some of those. I know St. Nonnatus, right? He's the one that dealt with the child in the womb, right? Share that story, if you could. He was from the 13th century, right?
I believe that St. Raymond Nonnatus, he was involved with the slave trade. He ransomed saints. So I'm not sure exactly, you know, what you are referring to there.
Tell me about him.
Birthmark. I picked him for the virtue of courage. And just in terms of how he lived, in terms of, I believe he was from Spain, and he chose what we would think is like, why would someone ransom themselves for the release of others? So he and he was part of an order of Catholics. I want to say from memory that they're the Mercedarians. Maybe I get that wrong, but there's certain groups of Catholics that they decided to go into, you know, Muslim southern Spain or northern Africa and to ransom Catholics by offering themselves as substitutes, as trades. So he was involved with that, and just the whole concept of someone wanting to do that with their life, or not just wanting to do it, but actually doing it. I'm like, I want to, you know, get into this a little bit more. So it's a couple different saints involved in founding these types of orders, but it was the Mercedarian order. Yes.
Tell me a little bit about, share maybe one or two of the stories in the book, some of your favorites. So maybe we should talk St. Lawrence today. It's a good day to talk about him. He, of course, is the saint who was martyred, grilled alive, as they say, and the legend has it that, you know, he's cheerful when he was being put to death and said to his executioners, "Turn me over, I'm done on this side." And whether that's fiction or whether it's a divine grace, I don't know. But share with us the story of St. Lawrence, who was a pretty big saint. He's remembered throughout the ages. I believe there were, a pope was martyred around the same time as Lawrence, and he was only a deacon. And yet we remember Lawrence. We don't necessarily remember the pope that was martyred in the same capacity we do here. But for those who don't know his story, maybe fill us in.
Sure. Well, let's start by saying happy feast day of St. Lawrence.
Yeah, that's right.
So, yeah. St. Lawrence, pray for us. So he was one of the leaders of early Rome, and true, when the Pope was executed, I believe in like the 250s, and the people right around the Pope were executed as well, so he was the highest ranking Catholic around, and the emperor said, you know, bring me, and they knew that he was in charge of the money of the church, like, bring me all the money. What he did was he dispersed all the money to all the poor people and the infirm. And when he was ordered to appear before the emperor, he brought the people of Rome, the people who he had given the money to, and saying, here's the treasure of the church. And the emperor was not very happy when he did that, but that's how St. Lawrence chose to respond to that in a very heroic way. And, you know, ultimately the emperor put him to death. He died for the faith.
So share another story. Who are some of your favorite saints in the book?
Well, let's go back to Saint Etheldreda, which I also have a hard time pronouncing, but I chose her. She had several sisters who are also saints, and I believe her father was a saint. So can you imagine living in a family with so many different saints? But she was in the 7th century, and I chose to pair the virtue of chastity with her. So it's just an amazing story of all the different saints, those who chose to live in their times. And I'm reminded of St. Philip Neri. We should never say how great the saints were, but we should always say what great things God did through his saints. And that's a huge difference. So they were just conduits of grace for God to speak to their times. And as I was going through the various centuries, you could see patterns of, you know, who the saints were, what they were working on, and how God was choosing to speak to us and to help his church in those particular times. And to do that for 21 centuries, it was quite a learning experience.
Yeah, I can only imagine. My guest today, and if you want to join us, feel free to dial in, is none other than Doug Grain. He documented 21 Catholic saints who went against the grain. He wrote a new book called Against the Grain, Heroic Catholics Throughout the Ages. And Doug, I need to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more. If you want to join us, feel free to dial in. Also, the chaplet is coming up in about 15 minutes, so feel free to dial in for that too. The number's 888-914-9149. You can also go ahead and send those petitions now to our Twitter account, at Drew Mariani Show. And maybe do somebody a favor. Tell them about the chaplet. We're going to be praying for 15 minutes. If they have a real need for prayer today, good time to get on board.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Tell one friend about the Chaplet of Divine Mercy.
I'm not holding a small cup, Drew. I'm holding an extra large cup.
A bucket.
Every weekday at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, we're closing in on that, right? Just a few minutes away. So if you today are down, out, depressed, overwhelmed by your circumstance, or maybe there's a critical situation going on with somebody that you know or love, why not intercede for them? We'll start in about 10 minutes or so, maybe 15 minutes. Why not call one other person? Such a great way to promote the message of mercy. And the Lord promised St. Faustina that those who promote his mercy, he would offer special protection to. He'd protect you like a mother her tender child. So I think it's a great way to introduce others. You know, you don't have to explain a whole lot, but just say, hey, every afternoon around the country and around the world, people gather and they pray for each other, and the fruit of it's been pretty big. So email, text, send them the link to our stream, you know, to our relevantradio.com or the mobile app or the station that you're listening to. It's great to do that. You know, one of the things I thought I'd talk about today, just to lighten things up a little bit, was a book that came across Maggie's radar. It was called Against the Grain, Heroic Catholics Throughout the Ages. And look, you and I are both called to live lives of heroic virtue. And life is filled with trials. It's filled with difficulty. It's filled with suffering. It's filled with all sorts of obstacles that oppose our salvation. You're going against forces that want to rob you of your eternity, that want you in hell, right? So the only way you defeat evil, the only way you rise above the concupiscence of sin, you know, our attraction, our fallen nature, is by building your spiritual muscles, by being people of virtue. And across the centuries, from the martyrdom of Saint Stephen to the death of the apostles to, you know, the innumerable men and women who've laid their lives down. Today we remember the deacon, St. Lawrence, who was put to death, was grilled alive. We see the lives that these saints have lived, their love for Christ. They were willing to endure the hardest of persecution and the most horrific of deaths. I mean, they were impaled. They were fed to lions. They were speared with pitch and set afire. They were crucified. They were disemboweled. You name it, you know. This has happened across the centuries. What would motivate somebody to be willing to lay down their life? It's their love for Christ. It's their relationship with him. And it's the virtue that they've been able to build. If you are not a person of virtue, you're not able to defeat the temptations or to stand up and to really be a witness for truth. So how do we build those spiritual muscles? How do you become that saint that you're called to be? How do you how do you build those virtues that we all need? I'm joined today by Doug Grain. He's written a book on 21 of those Catholics who went against the grain, and it's good to have him in studio today. Doug, good afternoon. It's good to talk with you once again.
Hello, Drew.
So let's talk about that a little bit. There was some common denominators, I'm sure, that must have ran through the life of a lot of these particular saints. What have you found common habits that seem to run through the saints? I mean, what was it, and how did they get to this level of holiness?
The common denominator was heroism. And just if I could take a quick step back, we all know virtue. Virtue, you could be honest, you could be courageous. Right. But in the Catholic Church, we're blessed to be able to participate in supernatural virtue, which means going to the Mass, receiving the sacraments. So we have a slightly elevated opportunity to participate in virtue. But what the saints did, they leaned into their virtue to such an extent that they did it in a heroic way. So therefore, they lived lives of heroic virtue, which is just another way to say they lived like saints, and which is a great like underlying theme of the whole book is be a saint, why not me?
Right.
And that's a great question we should ask ourselves when we wake up every morning. Why not me?
Yeah, no, I agree. You wrote about patience in the book, and I think this is such an important virtue. A lot of people struggle with being patient. They're in traffic right now. Maybe they're impatient with somebody at work. Maybe it's your spouse at home. Maybe it's the kids. And your buttons can get pushed. You might be tired. There's all sorts of reasons that we exercise impatience. But share a little bit about that. I think there was a story in your book about, and I think you talk about you and your wife, in fact.
True. In the 4th century, St. Monica, she had her hands full with Augustine, who was not yet St. Augustine. She worked with St. Ambrose in Milan. In her tears, St. Ambrose said, any mom who cries like that, you know, her child is not lost. And eventually St. Augustine came around and got to be one of the giants of the church. And in terms of looking with her, it's pretty popular that patience is associated with St. Monica. And as I was writing the chapter, it just occurred to me that, you know, through my 20s, I, you know, dated, you know, several women, but no one was really, you know, someone who I would consider to be a wife. But then in my late 20s, I was at church and a particular woman caught my eye. And, you know, a short time after that, we were married. So You never know, you know, even though it takes much longer in terms of timing, we are called to be patient. And as you were saying just a few moments ago, it reminded me of one of the things I came across in the book that I really love is life is short, eternity isn't.
Life is short, but eternity, yeah, if you keep that in mind, I think you are, you're on the right path. That'll help you rise above the temptations, the sin, and many of those vices that we often fall into. Well, I have about a moment left for you. I am grateful for you being here. If people want to get your book, is there a great way to connect? What's the best thing that somebody can do in terms of connecting and reading what you've written?
You can go online, typical sources, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Defiant Press. It's out there. Just do a Google search, Against the Grain by Doug Grain, and it should be pretty easy to find.
Hey, Doug, thanks. Appreciate you being with me.
Thank you, Drew. God bless.
Good to talk to you. God bless you. All right, Against the Grain, you can check it out, Heroic Catholics Throughout the Ages. And it's really what we're called to, isn't it? That is what this is all about. The other thing that I've often found that saints had, and it's something that I think could be elusive to many, they put their trust in God. I think faith and trust are so important. What often diminishes that, and maybe you're experiencing this right now, it's fear. Fear and anxiety. Coming up a little later, we're going to talk to a therapist about preventing depression and anxiety. It's at epidemic levels today. I'm going to give you some strategies to do that. How do you rise above those things? How do you get out from under that malaise? How do you shake off the anxiety, the fear that often overcomes you? You know, when it comes to the spiritual life, you have to remember that you're not the one fighting the battle. God is. And there is nothing caused by the enemy. I don't care how fierce it is. I don't care what trouble you're enduring today. I don't care how serious the crisis is. There's no attack on you, no insult, no worry, no trouble, work, no disturbance in your marriage, no illness that God cannot defeat. He can do it in a heartbeat, in a blink, in a glance. He's the creator of the universe and beyond. So everything and everyone that comes against you is inferior, vastly inferior to the divine creator. And I don't know why we don't put our trust in him, right? He's a good and loving father. So I want you to do that today. I really do. I want you to say, you know, today I'm not going to let anxiety rise up, you know, to conquer me. I'm not going to let it control me. I'm not going to let it limit me. I'm not going to let me live in this box, this darkness. I want to walk in the light. I want to walk in freedom. You have to remember what the Lord did. He gave you the authority, didn't he? To walk on snakes. He gave you the authority to walk on scorpions. Authority over all the powers of the enemy. He says in Luke 10, nothing will injure you. I love Luke 10, 19. Jot that scripture verse down, right? He gave us the authority to walk on snakes and scorpions and authority over all the power of the enemy that nothing will injure you. And authority means power, right? Believe, you know, in what the Lord promised. I don't know why we don't. You know, take up scripture, read your Bible daily. I don't think Catholics do it enough. You know, Jesus, you know, he promised he'd be there with us. And quote it when darkness arrives. You know, when you feel overwhelmed, when you feel you are overcome by these evil attacks or these hardships, stand on the rock of the word, right? Fear not. And I quote this one a lot. I love Isaiah 41:10, where he says, fear not, I'm with you. Fear not, I am with you. Be not dismayed, I'm your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous hand. I often meditate on that. Fear not, I am your God. I am with you. I will strengthen you. I will help you. That's God speaking to you today. You know, one of my favorite psalms, and I won't keep quoting scripture, but I you know, it's so full of these verses that when we get down and out, when we get overwhelmed, when you pick up the word and you read it, I don't know, I think it fortifies you, it uplifts you, it helps me. You know, Psalm 23, right? It's one of the more beautiful of all the psalms. I think even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. I just say to you today, be not afraid, right? Isn't that what John Paul II said when he stepped on the loggia in 1978, his first words to the people? Be not afraid. That was this great Pope's slogan. A friend of mine, a very gifted writer, he once said to me, he says, you know, Drew, fear is the energy of Satan. And fear attracts him. Love, he says, dismisses all fear. Love, he says, is the power of God. And I thought, you know what? You're so right. So right. God is a God of victory. He's a God of resurrection, of new life. He's a God that will help you rise above your circumstance, help you find a way out of the situations that are opposing you right now. Fear, that's faith in the enemy. Trust, that's faith in God. And when you trust and when you have faith, you can walk on water. You can trample on snakes and scorpions, right? You can drink poison. You can do all the things that Christ promised that we could do. He's on your side, so do not fear. It's one of the great characteristics of the saints. They didn't fear death. They didn't fear government. They didn't fear power. The only one that they had, you know, fear of, not even fear of, is the evil one. The one who prays does not fear the future. The one who fasts does not fear evil. The saints knew these secrets. I invite you to pray with me now. We'll ask God to conquer your fear.